You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
It's Wednesday afternoon, so it's time for Wayne on Wednesday with Wayne McCurry, who's a portfolio manager at FNB Wealth and Investment. Wayne, I sort of woke up this morning and I thought, oh gosh, my calendar on my phone has changed. It's now the first of the seventh month of 2020. Yes. And although people will say, well, that's because you're getting old and you think that the time goes a little bit quicker, but it's been an incredible 6 months. And I thought about you and I, we're more or less the same age, I think. And yes, if you take our life expectancy, Wayne, and you take 6 months and you divide it by how many years we've got left, it's quite a big chunk compared to when we were 25. So the 6 months that has just gone is very important to me. I don't know about you.
Yes, no, I agree with you on that. That is quite a noticeable percentage of estimated time left, yes. It's been interesting, to say the least.
Well, interesting. I think in the 30 to 35 years that I've been mucking about with the markets in various forms, I think it's probably in the top three most interesting 6 months of my career. What about you?
Yeah. And it's not so much the bear market. We've seen bear markets before. We've seen markets collapse 40% before in very quick space.
Yes.
But I've never seen two things, such a big recovery so quickly and such economic devastation.
Yes.
So quickly.
Yes. It remains to be seen whether the economic recovery can mirror the stock market recovery in terms of a V-shaped recovery. What do you think about that? Because the reason I say this is because I was watching BBC today and there's a shop called Upper Crust, which is, to me, epitomizes what's happening. Because Upper Crust has little cubicles at railway stations, etc., and it sells sandwiches to people as they wait for their train. It's retrenching, or rather sacking, 5,000 people. That's a lot of people. That's a lot of families. That is devastating. It's just one little shop. So I just think to myself, maybe the economic recovery is not going to be as quick as the stock market recovery.
Look, I agree with you there. I think it's going to take 2 years for the world's economy to get back to where it was last year. But one thing is for sure, the initial recovery of such a low base will be phenomenal. So let's just use an example. If the economy last year was 100, it's fallen to 80 now.
Mm-hmm.
So it can go from 80 to 90 very quickly of such a low base. But to go from 90 back to 100 is going to take the 2 years. So the initial surge will be astonishing. I mean, you can just take it. Motor vehicle sales were zero. So you're working on a base of zero. So any increase in that is massive. So, you know, in other words, our economy now, we don't know yet. We got the first quarter number. It's minus 2%.
Yes.
And our guys are estimating minus 8% for the year. And the finance minister was estimating minus 7.5%. But I read an article this morning where a well-known company, their directors at a presentation, said what they're seeing is not minus 8%. It's significantly worse. So we'll have to wait. But let's just say it's minus 8%. Next year will be about plus 5%. And then the following year will probably be about a plus 3% or plus 4%.
Right.
But even then, you're only back to where you were last year.
Exactly. So essentially, if you draw a line through it, you've just trod water for a year. Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah. And that's the last thing, certainly, in South Africa, that's the last thing we see. Because what will not go back to where it was last year in 2 years' time is unemployment. I mean, unemployment's going to be structurally higher for a sustained time period unless the government does things correctly. Now, I mean, as we spoke about earlier on, you and I have been discussing markets and we have known each other for decades now. It's the first time in my life as a market commentator, stroke, whatever you want to call me, where I now realize there is a clear, distinct possibility of South Africa defaulting on our loans and having to go to the IMF or the World Bank, cap in hand,
yes,
unless we change the way we do things in South Africa.
We've had 25 years, Wayne, to change things, and it hasn't yet happened. And I know that's just one generation, but I think that we'll be dead and buried and gone, but our descendants will perhaps see it in 25 years' time or in 50 years' time. But at the moment, I don't see any hope of us ever seeing South African GDP at 5, 6% and unemployment coming down from 30% to 20% or 15%. What do you think?
Yeah, look, it's very difficult to be optimistic. Look, I think we can, I hope we can not default on our loans and somehow dodge Argentina, Zimbabwe situation. But if we don't change what we're doing, it is literally only a question of time. I do agree, and I don't want to sound alarmist, I do agree with the finance minister, it's not imminent. It's not next year.
Right.
We've probably got 5 or 10 years still to sort it out. But if we don't, we will be doing that. And then you're talking about us, you know, getting on in years and 6 months of our life of is a long time as a percentage of the time we got left.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think you and I will see investment grade in our lifetimes. I really don't think it's going to happen. I mean, I would be ecstatic if it does, but the more I think about it, I think that, you know, it's going to take 2 decades to go back to investment grade. I mean, your debt is, you know, let's put Moody's aside and how long they took to change their minds. But effectively, we were downgraded at about 55% debt to GDP. I mean, it's going to be 90. If we do things right, it's going to be 90% of GDP. So, you know, maybe I'm being too pessimistic. You know, maybe we can go back to investment grade in a decade. But if I'm right there, that would be taking the high road, eh?
Yes, you're quite right. Let's look back at the 6 months that have just gone by, which is an enormous chunk of our future life expectancy. I'm looking at these ones now, and I'm choosing a couple. Let's start with the JSE Top 40 Index. Month to date, 7.8% higher. Quarter to date, up 23.2%. Year to date, only down 1.3%. Okay, which is pretty good. The JSE Gold Index, I have to pick this one out. Month to date, up 20. Quarter to date, up 68%. Year to date, 74.6% higher. And a year ago, in other words, the 12-month performance is 153.5% higher.
Almost double, yeah.
That's not bad. Property on the downside, a year ago, 44.6%. Year to date, down 40%. And if we go overseas, the NASDAQ, which is the one that stands out for me, 12.1% year-to-date up, and a year ago it was 23.1% lower than it is now, and that's excluding today, of course. There have been some astonishing moves.
Yes, there's no question about that. And, you know, even if we have a massively quick recovery and it only takes 6 months for the world economy to recover, the stock market still recovered too quickly, too soon. And I mean, it's not going to take 6 months for the world economy to recover. It's just not. We literally, I mean, I did a quick exercise. And admittedly, this is all theoretical.
Right.
But in theory, in my view, output, the economic value of output has been hit between 10 and 15% permanently. It's the same in every recession. You lose so many years growth. You lose so much output. So in other words, in theory, the stock market should be between 10 and 15% lower than what they were before the virus came along.
Right.
And then as the economy recovers, the stock markets recover from that level. And yet there's nothing like that. And, you know, maybe, I mean, obviously, I'm totally and utterly misunderstanding free money. Cheap money, free money. I mean, we've seen it for the first time really in 2008. Previously, you just saw lower interest rates, whereas now you see zero interest rates and massive, massive input of free cash. So maybe I just, you know, don't understand how it can swamp every other concern you've got. Money's cheap and plentiful enough. Nothing else matters. The stock market goes up. Now, I know there's been lots of stories about day traders coming in and swamping the market during the lockdown and how they've been responsible for a massive proportion of the daily trade. I still don't think that's reason enough for the stock market. I mean, the stock market's significantly bigger than any day trading that's going on. But nevertheless, it's a free money, it's day trading, it's hope of economic recovery, it's all of these things put together. You can't buy property anymore because that looks catastrophic. Mm. You know, throw a bit of money at gold and throw money at the stock market and it just goes up.
When it comes to free money, Wayne, I mean, I'll give you a simple example because I like to bring things down to anecdotal level. Let's say that I'm in Johannesburg next week and I said, Wayne, would you like to go for some chicken livers, peri-peri, and a glass of red wine with me? And I'll pay. And I pay for that. And then a week later, I say, can I give you another free lunch? We're going to have chicken livers, peri-peri, and a glass of red wine. It'll be jolly good fun. And you start to think to yourself, this is a little bit suspicious. Something has got to come back at me and bite me. And that's exactly what I think the central bank situation is, although it's been going on for years. At some stage, surely, it's going to bite back.
Surely there must be a price.
Yes, exactly. And there's no such thing as a free lunch.
We don't know that outcome. Mm. Yes, exactly right. But we literally don't know. The only thing that I would be – well, no, let me rephrase that.
Yes.
If there is an outcome, it's negative. If there is a cost to pay, it's negative. But clearly, in my view, you're not going to see that cost for the next 3, 5, 8 years because ultimately the bad news must be rising inflation. I mean, ultimately all of this free money, if it's going to become a problem, the problem will be inflation and consequently higher interest rates. So that's and the devaluation of, I don't know the devaluation of what, because every single country has printed money. It's not as though one country is printed and the rest have been frugal. Mm. You know, so you can argue that it'll be a debasement of paper money, but who's paper money? Because everyone's printing. So relative to each other, you know, no one's worse off or better off. So ultimately, the cost will be inflation, but you cannot see it in the medium term because, you know, we're speaking the whole time here about how long it's going to take for the world's economy to recover. People's confidence has been dented by this experience, as it's dented by every downturn. You know, you don't just all of a sudden start spending again and start traveling again. Of course, I might be wrong. You know, if there is a virus and it's rolled out, people will travel and they will spend and they will fly on aeroplanes because they say there's no danger. But until that happens, you know, even if all restrictions are lifted, you know, half of the people in the world are above average concern about the effect on their health. And that half just will travel distinctly less, won't go on holidays, won't stay in hotels, won't go out to restaurants as much, won't go to cinemas, won't go to casinos, even if they're open, they just won't go. You know, so, you know, I think this is going to take longer. But there will be a virus, there will be a cure for the virus. It will clearly come out with a vaccine at some stage. But if it's in a year's time or 6 months or 2 years' time, you know, until then, even if all restrictions are lifted, economic activity is not going to return to normal because people's attitude to life and normality has changed.
Yeah. We don't know what's going to go on, Wayne, but we've got a fairly good idea. We may be off the mark for a while, but I think a lot of people are now sitting down. A lot of very clever people are sitting down now and saying, my investment philosophy is going to be shifting a little bit from what I've been used to what I'm going to be used to in the future. I'm just looking at a snapshot between 2 o'clock and 4 o'clock today on the Stock Exchange News Service. At 10 to 4, it says the following. Sasol, progress with asset sales and further cautionary announcement. The share price down around about 1%. You put out something this morning on your Twitter account about oil companies' impairments and write-downs, etc. Can you explain that to us, please?
Look, when you own an asset, you value it as it's at its economic output. So if you own a big factory, you say, how much money can this factory make over its lifetime? And you present value that to today, and that's the valuation you put on that asset on your balance sheet. Now, all oil companies have been saying that their assets are valued at $60, which is their long-term forecast for oil.
Right.
But now they're all saying, oh, hang on, the long-term forecast for oil is maybe $45 or $50 a barrel. So therefore, we must take an impairment. It's a non-cash impairment, but we must nevertheless take an impairment on our asset values. And there's some massive numbers there. I mean, total BP. I mean, these guys are writing off $10 to $20 billion. And it seems likely that Sasol will also take a cash write-down, a non-cash write-down of all of their assets, Secunda, Lake Charles, because if you're valuing those assets, there's a difference between you using a $45 price and a $60 price. I don't think it makes any difference to the share price at all. It's just it's a non-cash restatement of your balance sheet, but obviously it affects what gearing you've got. It affects how you look at the company, et cetera, et cetera. But yeah, I found that quite interesting.
And then when I look at other things as well, it's another company delisting from the JSE. I mean, you probably remember ELB in the old days. What is it?
Bateman,
yeah, exactly. Firm intention announcement by ELB in respect of an offer to shareholders and the delisting of ELB from the JSE. That's not a big thing because no one trades it anymore. Share price at 50% today. But you probably remember trading it when you first cut your teeth.
I actually remember E.L. Bateman well. He used to manage their pension fund. I've been to their factory in the East Rand many, many occasions, in fact.
Yes.
So this was a big engineering company in the 90s.
Yes.
But now is the time where you are going to actually have write-offs. You're going to actually have companies being delisted because the share prices are so cheap. And it's going to be smallish companies, obviously. There's probably going to be companies that, let's call it family-associated companies like E.L. Bateman, you know, where the family still owned a reasonably large proportion of the shares, and you just buy out at these cheap prices and you delist, you know, especially if it didn't help. But we've seen a few delistings now, and they're all saying, you know, why we listed, it didn't really help with our trade, it didn't really help with our liquidity.
And it's expensive.
You don't really need to raise capital, it's very expensive. Look, the big reason why you actually list, well, there's two big reasons. The first reason is you get a price for your company. It's quoted. It's there. It's in black and white. And secondly, if you want to buy or sell, I mean, obviously some companies don't have big trade, but if you want to buy or sell, no matter what the price is, you can do it in a reasonably short time period. Whereas delisted, unlisted, you know, it's not so easy to value your company and to raise money and to get cash based on the equity value of your company. But if it's a relatively small family-owned business, it doesn't really matter.
Another one here. There's two trading statements, I think. The two companies are linked, Stadio and Curo Holdings Limited.
Yes.
Voluntary business update at 2 o'clock this afternoon from Curo. The share price down 1%. And Stadio came out with a trading update this morning. Difficult time for people who want to educate their children but don't have the money to do so. Very, very difficult times, in fact.
Yeah. And look, I actually like the concept of Stadio. Well, they're all related. Stadio, Curo. I like the concept. They were giving affordable private education. So it wasn't I don't even know what the price is now, but let's call it 150,000 Rand a year private school.
Yeah.
And yet it was better than the government school. And you had price ranges from 40 to 60,000 or 20 to 40,000, whatever the numbers were. So I actually thought there was unlimited runway for these guys. I thought they would coin it. I thought they couldn't build schools quick enough. And yet it didn't, you know, sort of first couple of years went extremely well. But the last two or three years, they actually haven't been able to do it. They haven't been able to just build schools as quickly as what was humanly possible and fill them up. They've had a few difficulties filling them up. And now, of course, with the COVID, and you know, no one's paying. If your child's not going to school, you're not paying school fees because you're not getting a service for it. Why must you pay school fees?
Precisely. Now
you're getting no service for it. So they will battle. But it was interesting on the Stadio one, they had some long story about training future chartered accountants in a company they bought and the enrollment was much bigger than anticipated, which sounds like good news, and yet they had to write something off. And I read it twice, and I didn't understand a single word they were saying.
If you don't understand, because, I've got no chance.
Yeah, because they said core earnings actually look reasonable, but headline earnings is actually a loss because of this extremely complicated story about this company they bought that was doing better than what they thought it was going to do. But because it was doing better than what they thought it was going to do, they've got to put a charge through the income statement, which makes a loss. I mean, as I said, I read it twice. I didn't pay enough attention, but I didn't know what on earth they were talking about.
Well, it sounds really boring to me, Wayne. Anyway, listen.
It was an accounting thing, yeah.
Exactly. It's probably Shapiro. Isn't he a chartered accountant?
Yeah, so am I, but I didn't understand it.
I've got no chance. Wayne, it's July the 1st. We've got another 6 months ahead of us. Can you possibly predict what the next 6 months holds for the JSE Securities Exchange, the world's markets, the world's economies? Because I'd love to give an opinion, and I'll say this, this, and this, but even now, I'm not going to open my big mouth and say anything. What do you say?
I'm prepared to open it. I think a couple of things. The economy will recover. We are going to survive this virus. It might take 2 years to get back to where we were last year, but it will recover. Secondly, more than likely going to have a stronger rand in the next 6 months. Not massively so, but more than likely a stronger rand in the next 6 months. But the prediction I'm most confident about is that the stock market is not going to go down 40 and up 40% in this 6 months, I hope.
So?
I hope.
All right, then. So it's going to stabilize and stay within a range, because that's what I'm seeing at the S&P at the moment. I look at the S&P and I say to myself, it is staying within a range. It's not bursting to the upside. It's not breaking down to the downside. Will that be the theme for the next 6 months?
I think it could possibly break to the downside, but not massively, say 10, 15%. But the big recovery is over. Now, you're not going to see another 6 months with 30% return on the market or 20% return. The big recovery has happened.
Okay, that's it. So we've had the knee-jerk reaction, we had the V-shaped recovery, and now it's just steady as she goes. You know, as a broadcaster, I've been quite excited about what's been going on, but actually I could do with a little less excitement for the next 6 months and put my feet up
occasionally. Yeah, we need less excitement. Boring's good, yeah.
Oh, I love boring, yeah. Boring is the new normal. Wayne, thank you so much for your time this evening. It's Wayne McCurry, who is a portfolio manager at FNB Wealth and Investment, and that was Wayne on Wednesday. The views and opinions expressed in these podcasts are those of Lindsay Williams and various contributors and do not reflect the policy, position, or opinion of any other agency, organization, employer, or company associated with strictlybusinesspodcast.com. Assumptions made on the analyses are not reflective of the position of any other entity other than the speaker or the author. And since we are critically thinking human beings, these views are always subject to change, revision, and rethinking at any time. Please do not hold us to them in perpetuity.